The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So we're talking this week about desire and letting go. And I've been asked to spell the Pali words. So here they are. The one that I used for sense desire, kama, is K long A, so that's an A with a bar over it, M A, kama. Different from the word for this, the Pali word for the Sanskrit karma, which is K A M M A with two M's and no long A. So K long A, M A. And then the word for renunciation is nekama, N E K K. H-A-M-M-A. So there you go. You can see they look slightly different, but they are somewhat related. Okay, so we've seen that there are different kinds of desire, some rather coarse and generally unwholesome, and some that are more refined, and that the associated happiness with getting various things is also coarser or more refined. So we know that material pleasures are not as deep or as elevated, depending how you orient the scale, as the well-being that comes from ethics, goodwill, and states of meditative calm. But most importantly, wholesome desires are onward leading. They help develop the path. And so the Buddha encouraged us to move along the path by asking us to notice how the mind can become more refined through letting go of what is coarser. However, we have to be careful not to get the idea that this is a linear progression and liberation is simply the upper limit of loftiness, or maybe even some transcendent realm that's far loftier than what we can imagine here on Earth. This kind of view is easy to develop, actually, but it isn't helpful in the end. It tends to allow ideas of superior and inferior, and it allows there to be a certain ego identification with refinement. So today, we're going to talk about what is the movement toward freedom? It's natural at some point to aspire to spiritual freedom. You know, what if we decide that we want to let go of all forms of suffering? And we want to take the happiness of letting go all the way. But then we encounter a seeming paradox. What if we want to stop wanting? Can we wish for freedom from desire? Does that make sense? So we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment. I just want to mention a couple of other quotes from the suttas, because it's good to know up front that renunciation prepares the mind for awakening. It does actually say that in the teachings. So for example, here's one. Desire and greed for the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind, so all six senses, is a corruption of the mind. When a practitioner has given up this corruption in these six cases, their mind inclines to renunciation. A mind imbued with renunciation is declared to be capable of directly knowing anything that can be realized. And then, when a practitioner has four things, their practice is guaranteed, and they have laid the groundwork for ending the defilements, which means awakening. What for? Thoughts of renunciation, goodwill, and harmlessness, and right view. When a practitioner has these four things, their practice is guaranteed, and they have laid the groundwork for ending the defilements. So we can feel assured that renunciation, and in those texts it was nekama, poises the mind for deeper wisdom and realization. In fact, the attitude of renunciation even persists after awakening. So here's another one. When a monk is an arahant who has reached fulfillment, which means that they're fully awakened, They are dedicated to renunciation. It is because of the ending of greed, the ending of hatred, and the ending of delusion that they are dedicated to renunciation. Okay, so we're convinced that what we're talking about here really is integral to freedom. But if we want to take letting go all the way, we're going to have to look a little bit more carefully at what's actually going on with letting go. So as we mature on the path, we start to experience that there is a distinction between volitional letting go and some kind of letting go that's not volitional. So there are many times in the practice where we see some reactivity in the mind, and we consciously, that is volitionally, steer in some other direction. In fact, just recently, I was fatigued at the end of a long day, and I felt my mind inclining toward irritation with some sound that was going on outside. And I brought up the reminder that the sound is impermanent. You know, this irritating sound is not going to last, even though it was trying to irritate me while I was fatigued. So that's choosing wisdom in order to counter aversion. And it was easy to let go of the irritation and kind of elevate the mind by remembering impermanence. But I did feel like I was doing that. And so I can, you know, at times I can carry in my mind the idea that I'm reshaping my mind by making choices like this, and that these choices become available because I'm practicing mindfulness. You know, that's a common way to think. And it's true to a certain degree. But there's also, we can also begin to experience that there's release that simply comes about when the conditions are there and the mind is seen clearly. It's fairly common for mindfulness practitioners to suddenly realize that they're behaving differently without trying. So, you know, maybe for the last 2 decades, you've been habitually tense when talking to a certain relative. You knew that. Maybe you were tense even before that, but you didn't know it. But you feel physically tense when you're talking to someone. And then one day you become aware that you're talking with them and your body feels relaxed. You know, you didn't consciously practice with body awareness with this relative. You didn't attend workshops on social anxiety or cultivating equanimity. But when you examine your mind, you realize that some defensiveness is simply gone. You know, you don't feel any threat from this relative as you used to. They're just as they are, and you can be with that. How did that happen? You know, don't you have to actively work on the issues that you want to let go of? Actually, no, not all of them. And we can only go so far on the path if we want to be the ones doing it. So as we let go of the unhelpful forms of desire, grasping and holding on and even pursuing some of the normal sense pleasures of human life, we can tap into a powerful movement of release that is not done by us. It is a movement toward, and that was the general term that I'm calling desire this week, this tendency of the human mind to be able to move toward things. We feel that. But we realize that we're not the ones doing it. And so we begin to suspect and to actually see that those beautiful qualities that we were wanting or practicing toward, they seem to come about naturally in the wake of releasing the unwholesome habits. So metta emerges when ill will is released. And maybe at first we can cultivate metta a little bit. We can breathe some life into it. We can bolster it a little bit. But if we look carefully, we start to see this deeper process at work, where when we release ill will, it's actually just that metta is there. So sometimes it feels like the heart is by itself dropping painful habits. And sometimes it feels like the heart is moving toward the deep peace of not grasping. They're kind of like the front and back of the hand, whether we're moving away from suffering or toward the end of suffering. But either way, there's a growing sense that it's not a willful creation that we're doing. I once told Gil, near the beginning of my practice, that I had had heard that desire was the cause of suffering, but I still had the desire for freedom. This is actually a very common question among Dharma students. And Gil said what most Dharma teachers say in some version. He said, "Oh, you can have that desire, Kim, until it's the last one." So it's fine to want the more elevated aspects of life, like ethics and compassion and wisdom. But bit by bit, we have to drop even those lofty desires in order to move fully into those states. So take compassion, for example. I would say that we become fully compassionate when we're no longer striving to let go of cruelty, when we're no longer aiming to generate compassion, and when we don't view ourselves as being a compassionate person. We can have some degree of compassion with all of those things, but it becomes full when compassion is just natural and unself-conscious. So gradually along this path, and it is gradual, we gradually concede our volitional desires to this more non-volitional movement of the Dharma. And then maybe the last thing to go is this aspiration of the heart for complete freedom. That we can sort of incline the mind in that direction, but then it's no longer up to us. So I want to read a quote from Ayakema, who was a wonderful bhikkhuni, Western bhikkhuni. She was German, and she was born yesterday on August 25th in 1923, so she would have been 99. This is from her. "Trying to achieve something in the spiritual world is just as foolish as trying to achieve something in the material world. There is nothing to achieve. There's only letting go. As we let go more and more of ego identification, desires, and support systems, bliss will arise." So it's interesting. What do we do practically with these teachings on renunciation? I want to kind of bring it back down to what we can each work with. I would say that please only let go of what makes sense for you to let go. That will be fine. The volitional renunciation of various material things that we realize we don't need, and various unwholesome mental habits, if we work on those, that will gradually help build momentum toward this non-volitional letting go. And that is what carries the heart beyond even the wholesome, even the beautiful, to what is free. So in a sense, the deepest happiness comes when we no longer want even happiness. But we don't have to worry about that. We just let go of the next thing that feels like it's limiting us. And the process will go on. I have so much faith in it. So to kind of tie things up, desire, which is this movement toward that we have naturally in the mind, that can help us walk the path. Only one part of this broad space of desire is harmful. And then there are these more elevated desires that lead to deeper forms of happiness. And that makes them onward leading because the mind is motivated to keep moving toward refined happiness. But to continue deepening, we'll have to let go of volition and ideas of achievement, like Ayakema said. So true letting go comes about without our help, in a sense. Eventually, we get squeezed into releasing all of our desires. So it's a process that makes sense, I would say, as you do it. There's no need to manufacture it or to push ahead or to try to let go of something that we don't understand why we have to let go of it. Each insight that we have and each little thing that we release helps us go on to the next thing. So it's actually kind of a path of trust, of trusting that desire and letting go do form an onward leading process that will eventually take the mind all the way. And every little bit that we're working on, whatever we're doing right now in that process, is beautiful and is helping us to feel more free in this moment and is helping others around us as we grow and develop in the Dharma. So this is kind of one lens that we can put onto the path of awakening. It's about desire and letting go. And I hope the journey this week has been good, and that, you know, may it continue for all of us. So thank you very much.